This is the Ripple Effect with your girl K-Dot, where we're discussing NBA and NFL and everything in between.
Hey, what's going on? Good evening, all. It's your girl K-Dot back in the Ripple Effect. You already know what it is. You already know the vibes. Let's get into it. Yo, there's a lot to discuss because, like usual, there's always a lot going on. Not just the NBA playoffs, even though, there's a couple things that are a little bit annoying about the playoffs. One in particular is the Utah Jazz. And if you've been listening to my episodes prior, it's not looking good for them. Luka Doncic is going to be playing in game, the next game, and their series is tied without him. It's like, I don't know. That dude Brunson went off of, 41? You know, and that's no shade to him because, you know, if you're able to put up 41 in the playoffs in a situation where you don't have your superstar and you're going up against Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, that's a tall order, tall task to complete. And he was just out there working. Like, but let's just talk about just the whole landscape of the playoffs and the way these young dudes have just stepped up, you know, throughout. Anthony Edwards is definitely another one in mind. Jordan Poole is another. I mean, shout outs to them. I mean, these guys have kind of come in the playoffs on a mission, kind of like, I mean, I get it, though, because usually the conversation is surrounded around the Durants, the Giannis, you know, the Kyries. That's what everybody wants to hear. You know, that's what everybody wants to see, first of all. And then everybody wants to talk about it and be like, oh, you know, these are all the great things they did. And that's all fine, well, and good. Excuse me. But the stars of the shows right now, if you look at it, it's definitely the role players. Look at Tyrese Maxey. He's another one. Just straight studs, just getting it done. But, yeah, like I said, Utah Jazz, this series is definitely a make or break. You're not getting out of the first round. I don't see Quinn Snyder being there. If I had it my way, I would definitely get rid of Rudy Gobert, try to trade for him. I would try to get, you know, keep Donovan Mitchell happy, of course, and just try to surround some good players around him, hopefully get a star over there. I'm sure, you know, Dwayne Wade is a part owner, so I'm sure he's already trying to have some, you know, contact people in the league. He has a lot of good relationships with people, so I'm sure he'll be able to figure out something or try to keep Donovan Mitchell and be able to make some trades happen for Rudy Gobert because it's not looking good. If they're not able to turn the series around, and I know some people are probably saying, like, wait, it's tied. Like, let's not overreact. Like, it's not about overreacting. It's just looking at what it is. I mean, this was supposed to be, if they don't have Luka Doncic, this was supposed to be not easy, but this was supposed to be easier. Come on. In years past, Utah always had the blame of, oh, we didn't have, like, one of our scorers. You know, I believe it was Bogdanovich at the time. It was always something, like injuries. Okay, I mean, we get it. But now when you see other teams stepping up the way they do and not using injuries as an excuse or guys who can't play for whatever reason, nobody's trying to hear that no more. Nobody's trying to hear that. Look what the Memphis Grizzlies, you know, did all season. And then look what they did at that last stretch when they didn't even have their superstar in Ja Morant. We'll get into them a bit later because Anthony Edwards is tearing them up, right? So is Karl Anthony Towns. But I told you, if Karl Anthony Towns was you know, didn't have the game like he had last, which we knew that wasn't going to continue. That's unlike Kat. I mean, he's shown us a lot over the course of this season, aggressively, you know. So I knew he wasn't going to have a bad game like that. But the way he's stepped up and kind of just said, all right, Anthony Edwards, I'm not leaving you here by yourself. I'm here to get it done. And the Memphis Grizzlies, everybody keeps talking about how they won all the smoke. Well, they got it. The Minnesota Timberwolves are letting you know we're giving you all the smoke. And right now, the Grizzlies are not living up to the fact that they said that they can handle it. So that's something to look into. And that series is definitely going to last a lot longer than I anticipated. So, but we still have to wait and see. But right now, the first, you know, obviously game or two is giving you a good barometer of how you know, how we should expect this series to go, because this is like a must win for, you know, certain situations like Utah. I mean, if you look at the landscape of the NBA in general, of how it used to be, I feel like maybe a couple of years ago, you know, the first two games of the series, you're like, oh, you're supposed to win at home. You're supposed to win at home, right? So that's not a big deal. So if the home team wins, all right, it really doesn't, the series really doesn't start to matter, or the series technically doesn't begin until somebody loses at home, right? Until, like, let's say in game three, then that home team loses after you're already up, because now you're talking about 3-0. So that's when you kind of start looking at things and you're like, oh, okay, so now we already can see where the series can go, because it's just not likely for someone to come back. Now, it's not impossible, as we've seen. History has taught us, right? But it just doesn't look good. But now it seems like home court, I don't know if it has something to do with the bubble, when nobody was there, you know, and there was no fans there and players had to adjust to that. It's almost like home court, I don't want to say it doesn't matter, because it still matters, especially to those role players, because they definitely still, they play better at home. They've picked it up a notch. But we'll see what, like, guys like Tyrese Maxey, for instance. We've seen the way he played in Philly. Let's see if they're going to keep up that same energy in Toronto without Thybulle. You know, that way we can kind of see the whole picture. We can see, is he going to be able to average another 30? You know, and obviously, as long as James Harden is playing the way he's playing and Embiid is obviously continuing to have in the season that he's having, I don't see them having much trouble getting past, you know, Toronto. I think once Scottie Barnes was out, I mean, it's just too much. Matchup-wise, it's just too much. And I saw that going into the series. As long as, you know, everybody was playing the way they should play, it should be a blowout. You know, especially if, like I said, Scottie Barnes is not there. That's a huge loss. But like people were saying, it's going to be interesting to see what it's going to be like and what adjustments that Nick Nurse makes once they start to go back home and they're playing in Toronto and they don't have just a city behind them. They have a whole country behind them. You know, rooting for them, because remember how, you know, big they turned out, especially when they were in the championship game and when they ultimately won. And we'll see how all that plays out. And when Drake's there, and you know, Drake is probably gonna be harassing, you know, Embiid or whomever, Tobias Harris, who knows. And another good point, like I was also saying from before, was Tobias Harris. James Harden seems to be the type of guy, you know, that they rely on heavily to be a playmaker, because of his ability of what he's able to do. He's able to create his own shot. He's able to get hot whenever, right? But at the same time, he has to be that guy to get others involved. And it was very key that he gets Tobias Harris involved, because once you get a guy like Tobias Harris involved and you already got Maxey going and you already know what Embiid's going to give you, that sounds like an unstoppable combination. That's when it gets real dangerous. And who does that sound like? That also sounds like the Warriors and their situation and why they're so dangerous at the moment. And I'm definitely going to coin that phrase of Lethal Weapon 3. And I know some people are wondering, well, if Golden State Warriors are Lethal Weapon 3, meaning Steph, Clay, and obviously the emergence of Jordan Poole, right? Then how does Draymond Green fit into this? Now, listen, I'm not really into nicknames. I kind of just wait for someone to drop with something, and if I like it, I'll rock with it. If I don't, I'm like, nah, that's probably corny. So I don't know what that nickname should be. I don't know if they should. I just feel like Draymond Green belongs in his own category, right? Can he get hot from three? Sure. You know, but he doesn't have that mid-range, create-his-own-shot type game. So that's why I'm not going to put him in, like, that category. That's the reason why I called him the Lethal Three, because Clay, Steph, and Jordan Poole has proven that they can create their own shot. Now, I understand that Jordan Poole has still a long way to go, but so far, you have to admit he's been pretty damn impressive. It's ridiculous, the numbers that he's putting up, how he's not scared of the moment. He's not scared to take the big shots. His confidence is allowing him, because obviously a lot of guys put in a hard work, right? But sometimes it doesn't always translate, you know, into the games because of the pressure, because of maybe their role on the team, you know, for whatever reason, or because, you know, their position has changed, or whether they're coming off the bench and now they're a starter. I mean, those things are very, very different. And knowing that you have that pressure of, okay, you know, Steph's coming off an injury and we don't want to have to play him as much as we need to, because they're in this for the long haul, right? So for Steph to be starting, you know, right now, it would be nice if they didn't need him to start right now, especially if he's still having pain, because if you listen to his post-game interviews, it doesn't sound like he's 100%. And if he's not 100%, you want to save him as much as possible. And that means he can just come off the bench and kind of relax a little bit and kind of get into his own rhythm, because as he did last night, he seemed to be fine with it, right? I mean, his game was ridiculous. I think he scored the most on the team, you know, at like 34 points or something. Point is, he's good. He just needs to we rather him worry more so about that foot, of the longevity, versus you being able to start and then end up having to be out for a whole nother series again. Jordan Poole has proven that he's got this right now. And then hopefully we can see Steph back in the starting lineup where he belongs, and Jordan Poole coming off the bench with those crazy, you know, shots that he makes. I mean, that's a huge weight off, especially since their game is predicated off of constant movement. Find the open man gets the bucket. No egos, no, oh, I'm going to take this, I'm going to do it myself. Even Jordan Poole with his passing ability, the way he passed it to Clay for that layup, crazy. Because once teams start noticing, okay, this guy's getting hot, you're going to start to see double teams. You're going to start to see teams, you know, D up on you. Then they're gonna pressure you. They're going to try to get the ball out of your hands. And you'll see that more and more. But if you're a defense and you have Clay and Steph and Jordan Poole on the floor, that's hard. Because at some point, you're going to have to gamble. You're going to have to say, we're going to have to leave somebody open. And you're going to have to figure out who that somebody's going to be. And good luck, because I would never want to be in that position, because you don't ever have to want to leave any of those guys open, because you already know they can get hot at any given moment. And once they get hot, you ain't calling them down. But definitely inbox me and let me know how you're enjoying the series. Let me know let me know pretty much like how you thought it was going to be. Is it panning out? Is it completely different? Right now, for me, I would say it. I wouldn't say it's completely different, but it's definitely a lot more competitive. And that's a good thing, too. It's not even a bad thing the way I expected it. Because sometimes the first round, you're kind of like, you never know what you're going to get. And you're kind of like, okay, there's a reason why this team barely made the playoffs, and now they're about to get swept. And so it is kind of nice. It is refreshing to kind of see teams like really go to battle, you know, really like go at each other. And in some ways, it's kind of like teams are just not living up to expectations for multiple years in a row. And then, yeah, I'm going to keep talking about the Utah Jazz right now. But I'm also going to talk about the Memphis Grizzlies a little bit, because there was just so much hype. And people need to understand, when there's so much hype surrounding around a team, when they're doing good things, there needs to be that same energy when they're not doing good things, when they're not living up to those expectations. And Ja Morant is playing. Right now, they seem like they have no continuity. They're having a hard time containing Anthony Edwards. And it's his first playoff series. And this guy is playing like he's been doing this for a while in the playoffs. I mean, he does have, you know, Kat. He does have D'Angelo Russell. And a lot of these guys that are kind of like, you know, Patrick Beverly, they're definitely playing with house money, because I don't think anybody expected them to beat the Memphis Grizzlies. Not after all the talk, not after how many wins they put up. No. Nobody was talking about that. They were talking about Ja Morant is a star. He's has the potential to be the face of the league at some point. You know, because some people argue Giannis and Kevin Durant, they have all these names that they throw around. But, you know, they were talking about Ja Morant like he's that dude. But it's like, wait a minute. We got to see how he comes back. Okay, if you're like me, I said it was going to be Memphis in five, right? So it still can be like that. It's just not, that's just not the way I thought it was going to happen. I thought, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies would take home court a little bit more seriously. Like, you're playing at home. I thought that was advantage Grizzlies, role player wise as well. You know, Ja Morant feeding off the crowd. I think Ja Morant's probably going to find fans, you know, anywhere he goes, just because he was just that box office throughout the season. But I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see how that plans out. But also, another series I wanted to talk about was Trae Young. What happened? Everybody, including myself, you know, had high hopes for that series, or had high hopes for Trae Young. And if you're like me, I think I said they may have gotten one win at least. But Trae Young, so far, it's like, I don't know if the Miami Heat just has them figured out. Because there was some question marks for Miami, but even though I said Miami's definitely going to take this, but I thought I was going to give the Hawks at least one game. But now I'm like, I don't know. If the Miami keeps playing the way they're playing, it just might be an early out. I know Trae Young is still confident. I heard what he said after the post conference, and I'm glad he kind of said that, kind of reassuring not only his fans, but his team, his coaching staff, letting them know, like, listen, we can't just go off of, you know, one game and kind of just overreact, because at the end of the day, Miami did get swept last year in the playoffs, so, which is true. So, I mean, I'm kind of glad that he's kind of, you know, keeping everything into perspective and not kind of overreacting over one game. But at the same time, we need to really understand that this can be an easy series for Miami as well. So that's another series to definitely look out for and to see how that goes, because I don't know. I don't know. The Bulls in Milwaukee series, that's a good one. But I think it's just too much of Giannis. It's too much of Middleton. I mean, these guys are just showing why they're the defending champs. They just are. The Bulls were very exciting this season. DeMar DeRozan had a terrible game, and he said himself he can't shoot like that. No, DeMar, like, really, you can't play like that. Not if you plan on booking your vacation earlier than scheduled, because Milwaukee is on a mission. Because everybody is definitely not taking their championship seriously, kind of like they're not taking, you know, even Jokic, his MVP, when, you know, seriously. It's true. Like, he's the defending MVP, but nobody really, you know, I don't think they really give him that, you know, that respect, you know, that kind of like, nah, that's the reigning MVP. Like, they don't really talk about him like that. And he's yet still a finalist for this year's. So that's going to be interesting to see who can step up and who can really shine out there and really make a name. Because that's really what this playoff series is really about. It's just really guys coming out and just making a name for themselves, because you already see who's doing that. You already see, like I told you about Tyrese Maxey, like, guys are coming out here, they're balling, they're letting you know. And my favorite series of all, we're going to talk about Boston and Brooklyn. Why is that my favorite series? Because I feel like there's so many X factors in that series that you don't know what can happen. Some people would say, we thought, you know, the Nets were going to win, you know, game one. You see, it's like, I don't see it that way. And obviously, I don't think home court advantage is really that big of a deal when it comes to Durant and Kyrie, because they're used to playing in pressure situations. And if you remember back, you know, Kyrie hit the game winning, if not the the championship winning three on Steph, you know, coming back after 3-1 like that. So pressure is very different for these guys, and he did that not on his home court, he did that in the Oracle. So that's a whole nother thing. That's a whole different type of cat, whole different type of ball game. So I think this series is definitely going to be predicated on defense. And if you've been following me on my Facebook or Instagram as we've been watching these games, I've literally been saying that the offense is going to look great. Kyrie's going to look like a magician out there. KD's going to look like a sniper, right? And then on the other side, you're going to see Jaylen Brown and Tatum finally trusting each other with alongside Marcus Smart. It's a beautiful thing. Not to mention, like, we got to talk about this. Horford. I don't think Al Horford is really given, like the respect or any, like he kind of just gets that like, oh, he's just been there for a while, you know, type of vet. He's gonna retire soon. Like I feel like when people talk about him, it's kind of like more so in the past tense of what he used to be, how he's behind, excuse me, like, you know, his best days are behind him. And that might be true in like some ways, but what he did in that game for them, not only the defensive rebounds, the offensive rebounds, the putback shots, what he provided as a leader on that team, always classy, never losing his cool, kind of just staying calm. You know, that type of guy that holds himself accountable when he know he did something wrong. He'll be the first guy to raise his hand, you know, pointing to his chest like, yeah, yeah, that was me, my fault, you know, and kind of just saying, okay, now what are we going to do next, you know. That's been remarkable, just watching these guys play and just finally get it together chemistry-wise. And that's what you saw at late in the game when you saw Tatum literally hit that layup like that off the backboard. Like, it was like 0.2 seconds. They had to review it just to make sure the Nets didn't really win that game. That's how tight some of these series are going to be. Every possession matters. Every second matters. Every play, every turnover, every missed free throw. That's something else that, you know, Brooklyn needs to look into. Because like I said, defense is going to matter in this series. You can't do the silly fouls. Can't do it. And when they get fouled, meaning Brooklyn Nets, you got to knock down those free throws. Got to knock down those free throws. Especially when the game is only going to be decided by a couple of points. And it may just come down to that. Any big lead in either direction, I'm not really going to pay attention to, because they're just a, you know, it's just a run away from being right there at late in the game, couple seconds left, down by a couple. I mean, it's crazy. I love that series. It's going to be great. I'm not changing. I know some people are changing, you know, their picks or how many games somebody's going to win. I'm not changing anything. What I have is what I have. I told you it was going to be Boston Celtics in seven. That's just what I have. I feel like at the end of the day, it's just going to be too much. It's just going to be too much because when it comes down to defense, I trust the Boston Celtics a lot more. And more importantly, they're trusting themselves more to get it done. And that's really what's going to boil down to. And I think it's going to be a tight one all the way through. I don't think there's going to be any blowout games unless somebody just doesn't show up for whatever reason. And then it's just going to boil down to who wants it more. But that's just my opinion. But there's always a little bit more to every series. And this is one of them because, you know, Boston does have a history with some of its fans. And just like other arenas as well, they have a history with some of their fans kind of doing a little bit more than just watching the game and kind of just, you know, clapping or booing or whatever the case may be. And we got to talk about it because I think it is getting a little out of hand. I know some people think that just because guys get paid millions of dollars that you can literally say whatever you want to somebody and think that it's okay. Some people want to say you should have some class, professionalism, whatever the word is that you want to use. But in all reality, there's no amount of money that can exempt you from being human. That's just the reality. Now, can he handle these situations better? I guess it really depends on the person. Because if we're all in this era right now where we're talking about mental health and how it really affects people and how we need to not only be more understanding of that, especially if you want somebody to understand your situation and different things that are going on. And that doesn't mean as a fan you can't boo or whatever the case may be. Like, that's cool. But I feel like if you're calling a guy out, you're talking about their character, like you're personally attacking them, talking about them, then you're kind of fair game at that point. You can call it whatever you want, but I think Kyrie is allowed to have human moments. Just like you're allowed to have a human moment, and it does not reflect how much you make. How much I make does not determine necessarily how I act towards people. Now, if this was something that was more of a violent act, then we'll be having a different conversation. But all is fair is in competition, and if you decide to say some remarks that are obviously things that are not, you know, you know, that's not going to be received well. I mean, let's face it. You know what was said. And if you didn't, I'm sure you can Google it. I'm not going to say it here on this podcast or this channel. But at the end of the day, it wasn't basketball related. So that's what prompted Kyrie to, you know, stick up his middle fingers and do all these other things. And it also prompted him to get a $50 fine. Now, some people would say, you know, oh, he deserves it because he should just ignore him. You know, then other people throw other names out there and just say he should just take it and do all these things. But, you know, but I do believe there's only so much that someone can take. And I'm sure if you were to look at yourself and look at situations that you've been in, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. Maybe you've wished that you could have acted a little bit, more professional, right? Or act a little bit more classy or whatever, like I said, whatever word you want to use. But at the end of the day, you're human. You're human, and if people are, you know, giving you that energy, he's literally just giving the same energy that was given back to him, to them, you know. So I think they do need to start evaluating, you know, some of these fans, you know, and what they're saying, because it shouldn't just be tolerated anymore. Like, basketball is such a unique game. I love it with everything in me. And when you get to go to the games, you actually get to, like, feel like you're there. You're almost in it. And if you have enough money, you're actually going to be on the floor. Like, your feet are going to be touching the same court that these multimillionaires, skilled multimillionaires, play on. So you're literally in it. You're laughing. You have a beer in your hand and not paying attention to the game. A ball can just go out of bounds and go right into your cup and spill all over you and everybody else. That's how close you are. And it's great. I mean, even a guy going for a loose ball and the ball's about to go out of bounds and he, you know, throws himself literally like towards you to try to save the ball. And he will knock out a couple of people that are sitting down, drinking their beer, eating their popcorn, hot dogs, whatever. That's how close you are. You're in the game. It's unique because you don't get that in MLB. You don't get that in the NFL or, you know, soccer or wherever else. You know, NHL, you don't get that. The fans are pretty separate. They have that separation. So that's why when people kind of compare it, there really is no comparison, because it's harder to hear somebody who's way further away that's kind of, you know, has like a high barricade, you know, from the players. And not to mention the NFL, they wear helmets, and so does the NHL, you know. So it's like they can't hear you. You know what I mean? They just hear what's going on the field, and, you know, and if the crowd is, you know, obviously just loud or whatever, they just hear noise. They don't hear anything in particular. But basketball, you can actually hear what somebody is saying. If you're close enough, you can hear everything. You can hear coaches talk. You can hear the referees, you know, not just them blowing the whistle, but you can hear them talking to the other refs when they're trying to figure out what call is which. But the point is, when fans have that luxury of being so close to the game, I don't feel like they respect it as they should. It's an honor. It is a privilege to be that close to the game. And some people just kind of take that as a, you know, a free shot. It's like you could say and do whatever you want with no consequences. And that's the thing. These are not necessarily kids that are doing this. These are grown people. And you're expecting Kyrie to hold himself accountable and pay $50 fine. But who is exactly holding these fans that get to sit so close accountable for their actions, whether they're throwing things, whether they're, you know, saying, you know, inappropriate or maybe even racist things? Who's holding these fans accountable? Now, I know one year that the Utah Jazz actually came out and held a fan accountable and actually, you know, banded them for life. And I appreciate that, because that's pretty much saying, just because you have the money to sit all the way down, you know, where you're sitting and you're close enough to where the players can hear whatever you say, does not give you the right to disrespect these players. It does not. They're not here for you to disrespect. They're here to entertain you. Simple. I don't understand why that's so hard to understand. Because I feel like if you're not a fan and you're there for other reasons other than enjoying the game, whether it's for your team, you know, or whether you're start, you know, whether your favorite player just happens to be playing or whatever the case is, why can't you just sit there and enjoy the team? And if you don't like something, you can boo. It's cool. But to take it that step further, expecting no repercussions on your side, you know, or expecting no retaliation, I think that's just ridiculous. Because a lot of these guys on the street, you would not say that to them. And for good reason. I guess you're not that dumb, right? I mean, to say something like that to a professional athlete, you know, like, it just wouldn't happen. So, rant's over. That's all I got to say about that. Because I just think that's ridiculous. And I'm not even sitting here, you know, just talking about Kyrie in general. I'm just talking about players in general. Because, you know, I don't always get necessarily agree with everything that Kyrie does. But, you know, when it comes to him standing up for himself, why does anybody have a problem with him standing up for himself? That's where I take issue. He's human. He's there to entertain, play a game. He's there doing his job. Everybody had a problem when he wasn't playing. For whatever the reason was, he wasn't playing, right? Now he's playing both home and away games. People love it. He's living up to everything I think we've all expected, the way he's been playing and handling the rock. And, I mean, the way this guy creates his own shot off the dribble to the cup, it don't matter, kicks out. It's incredible to watch. So as a fan of basketball, you should be happy that he's not only back, that he's literally surpassing a lot of people's expectations by his play, because that's all we really care about. That's all you really should care about. So the fact that people are being a little bit more extra, I mean, that's kind of on you. And I hope the NBA does take a little bit more of a look into what these fans are really saying, you know, what Kyrie Irving may have left out, because like I said, Boston does have a history, and I've been to the TD Garden before, and I can't say that I've necessarily experienced that nor heard it, but it doesn't mean it hasn't been going on, and it's been going on for quite some time. So I think they need to nip that in the bud before it can escalate. Fans need to stop. It's been going on all season too. This is not just in, you know, TD Garden or like, you know, in the Jazz, like when I talked about them earlier. It's all around. Just cut it out. Enjoy the game. You know? Like Kevin Durant said, just sit there and enjoy the game. I know I do when I get a chance to go. It's not always easy to go to these games, especially me, because I go to different games all around. I don't just go to, you know, I don't have season tickets, just go to one. I like to kind of venture off, go to Miami, you know, 76ers, whatever. So when I get to, enjoy it. Anyway, like I said. Just switching up to a little bit of NFL. I know I didn't mention the Pelicans and the Suns. That was my fault. I'll talk about the Suns for a second, just because I have the Suns sweeping the Pelicans, and I told you about CJ McCollum and how I like the way they're getting along and what they're doing, but I think it's just a miracle that they even got where they have gotten to. And I think it just ends here. And so sorry. I don't unless something else happens where I can really, you know, really get into it. But there's really nothing else really much to say about that. But kudos to CP3, Devin Booker. Even though Marcus Smart did win the defensive player of the year, we'll talk about that. I still think Bridges is a phenomenal defensive player. And I'm glad he had that classy move to kind of say, you know, shout outs to Marcus Smart, you know, and not kind of just like throw shade, because that was a really hard choice. If you had a vote in that, that was really close. And some people even said Bam should have won, but you have to take availability into consideration. Because if you have some games where you're really good locking down defenders, but then you're not there a lot of the season, when you have other guys who are really good and consistent throughout the whole season, I mean, are you going to fault them because they were there, you know, and some matchups didn't match up some nights? I'm all about availability. It's not about what you do for 10, 20 games, 30 games. I want to see what you've done for the full 82. And that's what people should be evaluating. They should go by how many games did they play and go from there. And what did they do when they was out there on the floor? And then look at the win-loss columns. Also look at the plus and minus. The plus and minus will give you a good idea of how they really did when they were on the court. That's just what I do. It's just that simple. You watch the games, you look at the plus and minus, you know, figure out, because sometimes it's not always going to show up in the stats. Like, plus or minus, that's why I told you that's like my favorite stat, just because it kind of gives you an idea of how productive they were on the court. And it may not show up in points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks. It may not show up. But yeah, like I said, I'm going to switch over a little bit to NFL, guys, before we get up out of here. I know everybody is so tired of this conversation, and shout out to you guys for talking to me or just interacting about it when I posed the question on Facebook. And I was saying pretty much once and for all, I wish it was for all, because it probably won't be. The NFL season, you know, it's still a couple months out, but once they start going again, I'm sure the conversation will come up, especially when right after the draft and teams maybe still a quarterback short or backup short or injuries or different things going on. Questions will come up. They will. And I feel like we just have to be ready when they do. But needless to say, we got to talk about Colin Kaepernick, right? I had a bunch of podcasts just on Colin Kaepernick's situation alone. And a lot of times it may have seemed that I've swayed on my views of him, and it's really not me swaying on my views. It's really just getting all the information as it comes at me, pretty much. And it's been about, what, 5 years since the kneeling, since when he was actually playing. And I'm just going to say this simply. All right, I'm lying. It won't be simply, but I'm just going to say this. Colin Kaepernick said the NFL is not trustworthy. He didn't like the way it was handled when he kneeled, when he was simply fighting for a cause of, you know, social justice, rights, civil rights, things of that nature, human rights, things of that nature, and something that he felt like everybody should be on board with in terms of just how it affects everyday life, not just in the NFL, not just millionaires, per se. He tried to convey that the best way he could. He did admit that he didn't have much guidance at first, so he was kind of just winging it, I guess you can say. But the passion was there, what he felt was there. Most importantly, the way he felt about it was so important that he was willing to sacrifice it all. What does that mean? You can say it's probably the same sacrifice that Flores is taking right now, when he decided to file a lawsuit saying the NFL has engaged in who knows how many unfair, you know, hiring practices for minorities. So they did file a lawsuit. The Flores situation is still ongoing. Kaepernick's situation was settled. They just said it was a multi-million dollar settlement because it was supposed to reflect years missed, because obviously they blackballed him, right? So it was kind of like, okay, we'll settle this because he doesn't trust us. We tried to hold a workout for him with a good amount of team. I believe it was like maybe about 20 scouts. It was enough scouts of different guys from different teams coming out to watch him. And they purposely chose minority scouts to come watch him just to kind of show, okay, you know, we're trying to be with you here. You know, Kaepernick refused. So like I said, the lawsuit, you know, end up being settled. And yet we still see clips of Colin Kaepernick, you know, throwing the ball. Looks like he's in really good shape. Looks like he stayed in shape. I was watching the I Am Athlete podcast. Great work, B. Marsh. I like what you're doing. Keep up the good work. But they recently had Cap just kind of just interviewing him, kind of just throwing some questions at him, like, you know, role playing, like if they were GM, you know, and you wanted to come on our team and we're worried about you being a distraction, what would you say? And he just went on to speak about how much money he made for Nike, which was just by default, just because some people just wanted to jump on, you know, the Colin Kaepernick train, so to speak, and just say, you know, we're with you here. And Nike made a lot of money. He said about roughly $6 billion would it be. That's a lot of bread, right? As well as his jersey was the number one selling jersey, right? Which in turn makes a lot of money for the NFL. So at the same time, and the reason why I bring up the money issue is because a lot of people are concerned about not only him being a distraction, about the NFL losing money. And, you know, they're all about their, you know, protecting the shield. They're all about their bottom line, right? So at the end of the day, when you think about it, Cap did have a point when he said that. But here's the thing. When I asked, do you think Colin Kaepernick should be in the NFL today? That's hard. It's hard for so many reasons. Cap has sacrificed so much. And what he did is priceless. To step up the way he did. After watching the documentary and just hearing other work that he's been doing within the communities and with other leaders, civil rights leaders and things, you never want to say someone doesn't deserve something. I don't feel like I'm in a place to really say who deserves what. But what I will say is, if I'm a GM and I understand the attention, not to mention just the attention that's going to be constantly surrounded by my team, and especially if I have a young team or just a team who I feel is locked in, ready to make a playoff run, maybe even compete for the Super, you know, compete in the Super Bowl, maybe even hopefully win it all. And that means every practice, cameras, every post game, every time we win, every time we lose, there's going to be questions surrounded around my team about Cap and his cause and whether that had anything to do with it. And if anything comes up and he decides to do something that was unscripted, so to speak, because you know how the NFL is, they're very, you know, they kind of just want you to be in a box. They just want you to play your position, play your game, help your team win. Anything outside of that, they're really not interested in. And you can agree or disagree with that, but that's just the way it is. And if you're that type of guy who's on a mission and you're trying to be a part of that team, be a part of that league, that private club that really only has one thing and one thing only in mind, that's very difficult. That's very difficult. If I'm that GM, I honestly say I don't know if I would do it. I really don't. I feel like when he had that lawsuit, I feel like that was really him saying, I don't like the way you treated me. You owe me this. You go your way. I'll go mine. But this is what I'm asking for. I feel like the NFL settled that multi-million dollar deal was because I think they thought they were holding up the end of the bargain by going their way and Cap going his. Now, I can see if there was no settlement. I can see if he worked out for these teams. I can see all that. But we can't work off of that because we know what we saw. He wanted things his way under his direction. And here's the thing. When you're a part of a team, you can't do that. You're a part of an organization. It's not just about you, right? It's about everyone collectively. It's about the team, the organization. It can't just be about you. It can't just be, oh, well, I like it better this way, so this is the way I want to do it. Like, that's not going to fly in any organization. Now, if you want to have an organization of your own, and that's what you want to do, that's fair, right? But that's where I'm saying, that's where it gets a little tricky, because some people aren't wrong when they simply say, but yeah, but when you look at other guys and you see their records and the criminals and all these other, you know, really bad, violent, aggressive things off the field, you know, whether it's, you know, I don't even need to get into all that, but I think everybody knows what I'm saying. And it hurts to say that, because you don't want to like have to just say, well, they're worth the liability, you know. And that's not necessarily my opinion of it. It's how the NFL evaluates what's good and bad for their team, right? When they look at what's an asset and what's a liability, right? If you're anything in business, you already know that kind of talk. Like, before they make any decision, they evaluate what's a liability and what's an asset. And if you're an asset, cool, we can mess with you. You got anything else going on, maybe we could try to figure it out. But if you're just a liability, that's not going to happen. So, unfortunately, when you're really talented and people can see how you can help their team, their organization, their franchise in many ways, that's going to unfortunately overshadow the bad. Just like when they say winning cures all, that's kind of what they're talking about. Now, if they have someone who hasn't played in 5 years and it's up for debate how he was playing when he was a starter, right? Even though he said he'll take a backup position. I mean, just thinking about NFL speed, just thinking about how to connect with the guys that are out now, where the NFL is right now, because things change. Things change, organizations change, cultures change for many different reasons. So to have a guy like that at the quarterback position, who's supposed to be the leader of the team, and there's too many question marks surrounded by it, I just don't see it happening. And it's not necessarily whether I want it to happen. I don't think it's not really a matter of personal opinion. It's about what the NFL is about. They're about their shield and they're about their bottom line. And then it all boils down to whether you think Cap is an asset or whether you think he's a liability. That's what it's all going to boil down to. All we have to do is just sit and wait, like I said, because you never know what can happen. But I just don't see it. I just don't see it. And just thinking about putting yourself in that GM spot, understanding that you can draft a young guy, make sure he gets acclimated to the culture and what your team is trying to do, is so much. And not have to worry about a veteran minimum and all these other things. Like, there's so many things that you would not have to worry about, because all they're going to be focused on is the game. I don't know. You guys let me know what you think. But that's my time. Always remember, losses equals life lessons. Peace.
This is The Ripple Effect with your girl, K-Doc, where we're discussing NBA and NFL and everything in between.